Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for TWiT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Live Special number 305, recorded October 2nd, 2016, World Maker Faire, Day 2. This TWiT Live Special is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. Neither rain, nor sleet, nor snow, nor lack of 3D filament will keep a maker from his appointed rounds. I'm Father Robert Ballester, the Digital Jesuit, welcoming you to World Maker Faire 2016 in New York, the biggest show and tell on Earth. Don't you wish it was as easy to print a circuit board as it is to print a 3D object? Well, with Volterra, it is. I'm speaking with Al Roy, who's going to explain what the V1 can do for your makerspace. Al Roy, what's the idea behind the V1?
Well, you know, it all started when we got really excited about 3D printers, but we're all electrical guys, and we said, where's our rapid prototyping tool? How do we get, you know, circuit boards, you know, right away instead of sending them out to a factory and waiting for weeks for them to arrive? So that's what led us down the path to creating the Volterra V1. And so right now we've built this amazing printer that can print circuit boards right from your desktop in an hour rather than sending them out.
What I love about this is some of these are, if you're a maker, these are readily recognizable. If you look at this board, you think, oh yeah, that's an Arduino Nano. I've seen those. I bought a bunch of those from eBay, clones from China. But now I can actually make it inside the comfort of my own lab. I can order the components. I can assemble it exactly the way it needs to be without having to wait for lead times of these prototyping shots. Tell me, what's the process? What do I need to make this work? How do I design my boards? What kind of consumables am I going to be looking at?
Yeah. So you can design your circuits in whatever CAD tool you're already comfortable with. We take Gerber files as the input. So you just drag and drop them into our software and go through a little quick calibration step and then print. And the ink that we use is a silver nanoparticle-based conductive ink. And so we lay that down based on what your Gerber files dictate. There's a short curing cycle. After that, you swap off the conductive ink, throw on solder paste. We've got a cartridge for that as well. It'll dispense paste on all the pads. And we also have a 500-watt heater that'll reflow your entire board for you. And we can do that on boards that you printed on the V1 or boards that you got fabbed at a factory. Either way, we're just trying to help get rid of stencils, get rid of breadboards, get people building actual electronics quicker, faster, and better than ever before.
So this really is a one-stop shop. I can draw my board, I can put down the paste, I can place the components and reflow it all within the V1.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, now guide me through the cartridge thing. So you've got several cartridges. This is magnetically held inside of it. Yeah. How do I swap it out? What do I need to do during the process?
Yeah. So I can lean over here and show you. We wanted to make the printer itself as stupidly simple to use as possible. It literally got one power button on the front and then these magnetically swappable print heads. So we have one for the conductive ink, one for the solder paste, and it's as simple as that. Everything else is pushed into our software package, where even there, the same sort of design principles are reflected, where we're trying to make it as intuitive to use the tool and the software as possible so people are focusing on designing great stuff, not on learning how to level a bed or do all these different things. So in our software, we literally have videos playing alongside saying, now do this, now take this cartridge off, now clamp your board down, because it just makes getting up and running, a breeze.
Let's talk about that learning curve a little bit, because one of the things that really sped up the development of 3D printing was things like Thingiverse. And on all these sites where you could share designs with other people who could take your design, maybe tweak it a little bit, and make it their own. Are you thinking about creating something like that for the Volterra community, where designs that people are proud of can be shared? People can take, say, oh, my custom Arduino board, my custom Atmel board, and then make a couple of changes and make it for their application.
You know, that's already starting to happen on our forums right now. We've got all the people that currently have a V1 are out there printing stuff, sharing designs, and getting other people to build them too. And some pretty cool stuff is coming out of it. We just had somebody print a 915 megahertz antenna and was doing some like wireless stuff. So it's, you know, honestly, that's what we get up for in the morning, is to check the forums and see what people are doing, what they're building. It's amazing to see this community start to grow over the last few months. It's insane.
All right. The big question is going to be pricing and availability. If they're enticed by what they've seen, if they think that maybe they want one of these in their maker shop so they can fast prototype all their boards, where do they go? How much is it going to cost?
So www.volterra.io, V-O-L-T-E-R-A.io. We're already done fulfilling our Kickstarter. We are shipping as orders come in now. And so the printer itself is $21.99. That comes with the printer, the conductive ink, the solder paste, all the boards and accessories you need to get started. Get them while they're still there.
Roy, thank you so very much. And thank you for making something that I think it's got a niche in the maker community that I think needed to be filled. Folks, here at Volterra, you can dream it, you can design it, you can build it, and then just print it. Do you remember when you were a kid playing with your first Erector set? Maybe some popsicle sticks that you've built into a log cabin? Well, wouldn't you like to do the equivalent as an adult? Well, you can with MakerPipe. I'm speaking with Dave here, who's going to explain why this is what all the adults will be playing with next year. What exactly is MakerPipe?
MakerPipe is a connector system to be used with electrical conduit. Standard electrical conduit you get at your local hardware store. It's a great building material. Normally, electricians use it to run wires through in buildings, but it is strong, it is available anywhere, and it's really cheap, like dirt cheap. So you can get a 10-foot length for $3.50, and we're making connectors that go with that conduit, so you can build what you love. You want me to show you how it works?
Absolutely. Now, what I like about this is I've been doing something like this with PVC pipe just to mock things up. But, of course, PVC pipe doesn't have the rigidity, it doesn't have the strength that you need to make actual load-bearing structures. You've allowed me to take an incredibly inexpensive material that's very easy to cut. I mean, you buy a $5 cutter, and you can cut through electrical conduit, and now I can assemble them into any configuration I want.
That's right. And it's really easy. It's very approachable. You can do it without any power tools. You mentioned the pipe cutter, and all you need is an Allen wrench to make the connection.
All right, show me. So create something right here, right now.
Okay, so it's two pieces. This is our standard T connector. And what you do is it fits together like a puzzle piece. And all you need is a nut and a bolt, and you've made a strong connection. So let's say you want to make that. And an option you can have is either make it with bare pipe, or you can use heat shrink tubing to give it a little bit of personality. So all this is heat shrink tubing over the conduit. It goes together like that, and with an Allen wrench, you made a secure connection. Tighten it up, and all you need is simple tools.
I love simple, and I also love the fact that you've created like a Rube Goldberg machine on the other side. It doesn't take much time at all, but I got to ask, how much weight can this carry? I mean, do I want to be stepping on this and making a scaffolding out of maker pipe, or is this really for the lower load-bearing structures?
Let me show how much. So we made this table. It uses our corner connectors made out of electrical conduit. And it can hold, I'm a big guy, right?
Not bad at all. Okay, now, here's the big question. Pricing and availability. If they're out there and they're saying, okay, that's exactly what I need to make my next X, Y, or Z, when can they get it? How much is it going to cost?
We're live on Kickstarter now. We're just starting out. We're going into production, and our first deliveries will be early March. Now, the pipe, you can get it anywhere, right? It's really cheap. The connection is less than $3 per connection with all the hardware and everything you need. So you can build, we built our booth out of it. You can build it relatively inexpensive.
Thank you very much for sharing this. I love to see fresh ideas with things that we already know, and this is definitely one of them. Folks, if you're looking to create your next structure, maybe you need to lay some maker pipe. One of the more fascinating aspects of the maker world is that people here aren't just trying to make the latest 3D printer or the latest electronic doodad. Some of them are genuinely trying to make the world a better place. That's why I'm speaking with Dylan from O Horizons, who has an idea for making clean water available cheaply for everyone around the world. Dylan, this looks like a concrete form. What's it doing at Maker Faire?
So we're O Horizons, and this is our wood mold. We've engineered it, and you pour concrete into it. We have a construction manual on our website. It's open source, so anyone can go on our website and download it and build this mold. Each mold can make 50 concrete filters, and then the filter gets filled with sand and rocks. It goes in a family's home in a developing country and filters their water. It takes 98% of the bacteria out of the water.
I absolutely love this because water, we kind of take for granted in developed countries. We think, oh yeah, you can drink out of the tap, you can drink your bottled water. But in most of the world, clean water is still very elusive. In fact, most of the deaths that we get outside of the United States and other developed nations come from waterborne bacteria, waterborne viruses. This is one of these things that could make it cheap and easy for someone to turn out enough filters for an entire town, an entire village. What is the biggest stumbling block for you as far as getting this out there, getting word about what you've done? What's most challenging?
That's an interesting question. Well, like you were saying, there's nearly a billion people that don't have access to clean water. Kind of education. That's what this is all about for us, is finding nonprofits that are looking for a solution like this, and actually just sharing it with them, because solutions like this are available. It's just people need to find out about them. And I think people are coming to our website. We've had 400 downloads in the last year. So people are looking for solutions like this. It's just how to access the organizations that are looking for something like this.
I've seen projects like this, and they get tripped up by the fact that the design ends up being too complicated to replicate at the local space. I mean, yes, you could put up all the plans, but if the parts are exotic, or if the materials that you need aren't readily found, or if it's just too expensive to make each copy, it never takes off. Can you show me some of the things that you've done with this mold to make sure that that's not going to happen?
Yeah, so biosand filters, which are the filters that we do, they were originally designed to be made with a steel mold. And the steel mold, you needed a skilled welder, and you needed the startup costs were about 10 times as expensive as this wood mold. So wood is the beginner's metal. I mean, this one, we have a very extensive construction manual, but it's really not too hard to follow. It's very step-by-step, user-friendly. And a lot of organizations have actually tried to make a wood mold because it's so much easier. But a couple of the iterations that we've made for this is the support materials. So instead of screwing screws right into it, which actually warped the wood, we use these support materials and these bolts that actually allows you to make more of these wood molds and more filters per wood mold. And then we have this inner collapsible core right here. So it's kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. You pull out the dagger board, and this is actually patented, and collapses in on itself, and it allows for so many more of these concrete filters to be made from each wood mold. So basically, it's just trying to make the biosand filters, the production process, as simplistic as the filters themselves.
I love this. I especially love the collapsible part of the mold, because I've had that problem where I've made a mold and then the wood pieces become part of it forever because I can't remove them.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of field research and actually working. Our first project was in Honduras, and we started seeing that this isn't sustainable. We need to go back to the drawing board and figure out how we can make this better. Our organization's motto is low-tech, high-thinking. So it's all about being creative and figuring out how we can make this as easy as possible.
Also, kudos to you for making your booth a place for young children to come and actually find out what goes into making a water filter. I see they're playing with sand, they're playing with charcoal, they're playing with different materials. This really is one of these projects I think everyone should know about. So once again, could you tell our audience, where can they find you? Where can they find O Horizons? Where can they find out more about these forms?
Yeah, so ohorizons.org. We're a nonprofit. You can go on our website. We have technical resources on there where you can find out about biosand filters. You can download our construction manual and actually make the wood mold yourself. We're all on social media, so O-Horizons on Twitter, we're ohorizons.org. But, yeah, we're just trying to reach as many people as possible, make the world a better place.
Thanks again, Dylan. Thank you for giving one of the, one of the inspirational stories of Maker Faire. Folks, Dylan, O-Horizons, think big and drink cleanly. There's a credo in the Maker community. It's how we live our lives, how we live our makes, and it's called find a problem, fix the problem. I'm here with Jacob, who's going to explain how that fit into his creation of this. Now, Jacob, not too long ago, you were a contestant on AGM. That's America's Greatest Makers, an Intel-sponsored show that brought together some great minds to find fixes to problems in the real world. What was the real-world problem that you found?
So we saw, you know, we're here in New York. We saw that a lot of cities wanted programs like City Bike. City Bike has been wildly successful at seeing 30,000 rides a day, but it costs $10 million to get off the ground. That's a lot of money, and a lot of cities just don't have that capital. But a lot of cities want bike sharing programs. They're these very popular things. They're good for your people. They're good for traffic. They're just like good programs to have. But the problem is a lot of cities can't afford them.
Now, of course, it's good if you can give them lower cost equipment. It's good if you can provide them with the blueprints for a system that's not going to cost them millions upon millions of dollars, but rather has a low barrier to entry. And part of that is, how do you make sure that bikes get tracked, bikes get locked up properly, and bikes get taken care of? You came up with a solution that involves the Intel Curry. Tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah, so our solution is called Tandem. Love the name. I still love the name. So Tandem works. It's just a U-lock. It's a very smart U-lock built, as you mentioned, using the Intel Curie module here. Bike owners will just take their bikes, lock them to any public bike rack, and anybody who wants to rent the bike can just walk up to the bike and connect to the lock using their phone. Since there's Bluetooth in the Curie module here, there's Bluetooth in your phone. And yeah, so then as you're riding the bike, the lock is still connected to your phone via Bluetooth, and your phone is a GPS. So then it's just tracked. Your phone's location is the bike's location. And when you lock it up, we just drop a pin there.
What I like about what you've come up with is it's also a solution that did require the advancement of technology to where it is. We needed a device that was low power, that had multiple ways to connect, you know, Bluetooth or Wi-Fi if you get the higher end model, and also could keep a stateful account of exactly what was happening to it. That you could do by bodging together a couple of other products, but with the Curie, you got it all in one chip.
Yeah, it's amazing how simple it really is now that we have Curie. I mean, we are using one I.O. port on the Curie. It can do a lot more than that, but we're using one I.O. port, and that's just to drive the motor here. It's just beautifully, beautifully simple.
Well, tell me, if they wanted to get into developing a Curie, what kind of experience do they need? What kind of skills do they need for electronics, for programming? What will they actually program in? Describe to me the making experience with an Intel product.
Yeah, I mean, the barrier to entry to using Curie is very, very low. Right here we have some Arduino 101s that people can try out. An Arduino 101 works just like a normal Arduino, except it has a Curie in it. So you can do a lot with that, but it's so easy to get started. You can just do the normal tutorials, treat it just like a normal Arduino, and then you can go way, way, way deeper from there. You can start tapping into the neural network, the Bluetooth, accelerometer, gyroscope. Goes from there, but you just have to buy an Arduino and follow some tutorials. It's really easy to get started.
Fantastic. Jacob, thank you very much. Now, if they wanted to find out more about you, more about your time on America's Greatest Maker, or more about what you've done with the Curie, where should they go?
AmericasGreatestMakers.com. There's a tab for teams, and we are Team Tandem. Me and my two wonderful teammates who unfortunately aren't here today.
Thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for your intelligence, and thank you for your maker spirit. So you've already got your money invested in a good 3D printer, but now you want to start playing with electronics, and you don't want to buy one of those pick-and-place or specialized 3D printing machines that cost thousands and thousands of dollars. Well, what if I told you that you could use your existing investment and print your circuits? That's why I'm here at Multi3D with Shenrong, who's going to explain what their Electrify filament can do for you. What is this?
Yeah, we call it Electrify filament, which is a conductive filament that is 100 times more conductive than anything else that you can buy from the market.
Yeah. But the key here is that I could put this into my existing 3D printer. Like, for example, what's the temperature I have to get my hot end up to in order to extrude this properly?
We prefer printing these filament at like 140 to 160. And yeah, there are more information actually on the website you can find out.
But basically, that means that any ABS, any PLA printer will be able to do this just
exactly.
fine.
Exactly, yes.
One of the things that I saw you demoing earlier is that once I get the filament down on whatever 3D print I have, I can actually reflow it. I can use a soldering iron to move over some of the material so I don't have to do big blobs of solder. I can literally have a project board that I place my SMD components, resolder, and done.
Yes, that's how we actually form the contact between the LED and the conductive filament. Yeah.
Now, this is a concept that has been tried several times. I've seen companies try to do this. Some of them have put an actual filament of wire inside of the filament. That never works really well. I've seen other companies that have tried to do something where it's a specialized 3D printer that will lay down regular filament and then lay down their special wire on top of the filament and then another layer. What did you do to make this work properly?
You mean why this is so conductive?
Yeah, what is your special sauce?
We have a metal filler as a conductive filler. So as you can see that all the other conductive filament are all carbon-based, but metal, we think, is much more conductive. That's our recipe.
All right, now, our audience is going to want to know how complicated can they get, because, I mean, it's one thing to hook up some blinky LEDs, but if I wanted to do more complicated circuitry, if I wanted to actually get my paths a little far down, how far could I go using the Electrify filament?
Our strength for this filament actually is more towards this LED project. And it's also depend on the 3D printer that you're using. But if you want to build like complicated circuit, so you probably want to use a smaller nozzle size, right, to print thinner traces or more complicated. But it depends on the 3D printer that you're using.
I can tell you I'm looking forward to trying some of this on our Maker Show. Could you please tell our audience where they can find you, where they can find Multi3D, where they might be able to buy some Electrify filament, and, of course, all the addresses to make that possible?
Sure. Our company name is called Multi3D. You can find us at www.multi3dllc.com. You can buy this filament directly from our website and also from Amazon and eBay as well.
Thank you very much for speaking with us. Thank you very much for sharing your tech. And it's Multi3D. It's electrifying. We'll get back to our Maker Faire action in just a moment. But first, let's take a pause to thank the sponsor of this Twit Live special. Hey, folks, do you read enough? I know we all want to. We love reading, but we don't often have time. It's not really convenient to find hours on end to be able to sit down and curl up with our favorite piece of literature, be it fiction or nonfiction. And that's why I use Audible.com as my source of audiobooks. I can listen in the car. I can listen on the plane. I can listen whenever I'm jumping from Twit Live Special to Twit Live Special. I love Audible, and I know you will too. Now, Audible gives you the leading provider of audiobooks across all types of literature, including fiction and nonfiction, that you can play back on your mobile device, on your laptop, on your PC, pretty much anywhere where you live. That's where Audible will feed your brain. For those who need two audiobooks to give Audible a try, today we're offering Twit listeners their Platinum Plan, and that gives you two free audiobooks to try out and two book credits per month. It's a great deal for people who enjoy listening to audio programming. And as with their other plans, you can also get a free subscription to the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times daily audio programs. In other words, with Audible, not only do you get to keep up on your latest and greatest pieces of fiction and nonfiction, not only can you listen to the latest and greatest sci-fi marvels like The Martian or Ready Player One, but you can keep up to date with your day-to-day events, all with the same Audible plan. For more details and to get two free audiobooks and their platinum offer, go to audible.com/twit2. That's audible.com/twit2. And we thank Audible for their support of this Twit Live special. Do you know your way around a soldering iron? Because if you do, then most likely you've bought components in those spools, those long spools that seem to, you know, they do a really good job of holding small components, but you might have wondered what those spools are for. Well, here at Maker Faire, we know exactly what they're for because we're at Chipsetter, and we're finding all about the Chipsetter 1. Now, what is the Chipsetter?
Chipsetter 1 is a low-cost pick-and-place machine. These machines are used to pick up these tiny components and place them exactly where they need to go on the circuit board before the reflow process. These are the types of machines that are used to build every electronics device, whether a phone or a computer motherboard, except they're usually very, very expensive.
Yeah, I've seen a few of these machines that go into big factories, and I mean, it's not uncommon to see them go for seven figures for a nice big one. This is one that's more for a workshop, and yet it seems heavy duty. There is a lot of components in there. Tell me a little bit about the specs. How many spools can I stack? How many different types of components? How complicated can I make my circuit board?
So we accept components down to a 402 size or 0.4 millimeter pitch ICs, and our system can accept up to 48 millimeter feeders. We also have 12 and 16 millimeter feeders, and you can mix and match them. We have a continuous strip where they can be connected. But really what we want to do is solve two problems, a setup time problem and a software reliability and ease of use. The way we want to solve the setup time problem is having feeders that are so cheap you can have one per reel in your inventory. So when you're setting up the machine, you're not fiddling with loading tapes in, you're just snapping them in.
On a typical project where I might be using, say, 10 different types of components, a couple of resistors, a couple of capacitors, a few different types of LEDs, how quickly could I go from drawing to prototype?
Well, the main thing you'll need to do is create your manufacturing data. But the nice thing is that you've already got that information in your CAD software. So your CAD software will export two files, a centroid file and a bill of materials file, which are simply imported into our software. From there, if your feeders are attached and you've told the machine what is in each feature, you hit go and you can just watch it run.
I have to ask, I have not seen even small pick and place machines for less than $30,000. How is it that you've got the price point of this so low? And actually, I guess we should ask, what is the price point of the Chipsetter 1?
This machine, after our Kickstarter campaign, this machine will be $6,000 US MSRP. It'll come with seven feeders, including two cut tape trays, a tube feeder, and all the nozzles you'll need. But our Kickstarter campaign is live right now, and there's 40% off early bird discount, 33% off, and 25% off. So there's some major savings to be had to help us reach our goal.
Now, obviously, the customers who would be most interested in this would be makerspaces, who would want this right alongside their industrial-level 3D printing machines and CNCs. But who else do you see getting one of these, especially at this low price point? Is this in the reach, do you think, of that small basement workroom maker?
Well, we've sold machines to universities, definitely makerspaces, and small design firms. But we know that the problem of small components is only getting worse, and we know that people like us have wanted this machine, so we think that definitely we can reach everyone who wants to make great things.
I tell you, this is one of the coolest pieces of tech I've seen at the fair. Thank you very much for sharing it with us. Once again, please tell them where they find you, where they get to your Kickstarter, and where they can start picking and placing.
So you can reach us at chipsetter.com/KS to reach our Kickstarter campaign. Thank you.
And I, for one, welcome our pick and place robotic overlords. A big part of Maker Faire is that it's not just about technology. It also incorporates the heart of the artist. That's why I'm speaking with Gilly in front of his, I think the only way to describe it is fire-breathing monster that he's brought to Maker Faire to thrill the crowds. Gilly, what is this?
Well, actually, my name is Orion Fredericks. The name of the sculpture is Gilly, for short. This is a mythical beast of all of my favorite animals in one. You got the raven, the mantis, the manta ray, the shark, and this is the mother of two smaller fire sculptures I made 15 years ago. And about 3 years ago, I decided it needed a mother. So I built something a little bit larger.
Oh, I'm used to San Mateo Maker Faire, so we always get the Burning Man crowd down there. We get a lot of fire-breathing sculptures. Not so many here on the East Coast, so yours really does stand out. And we've been hearing you the entire weekend, so we finally decided to come over. What goes into creating something like this? Because I noticed you have a control panel with two high-pressure propane leads going into a control box. What's the tech behind the fire-breathing monster?
There is a lot of special sauce in that. I would say rainbows and moonbeams are a big part of it. But it's pretty much like a forge or any furnace that you would melt metal or glass in. And it's controlled with normally off solenoids, 120 volt, and one part of the control panel, my right side, controls the head, and the left side, my left hand, controls the tail. So there's two separate combustion chambers within this piece, within Gilly, that allows me to do a call and response between the combustion of one side and the other.
Okay, that's actually amazing. So you're actually building a pressure between the two sides, and that's what's creating those pops that we can hear.
Yes, yeah.
Now, let's get past the tech, because the tech is something that most of our audience can do. It's, you know, solenoids we know how to work with. We know how to work with control panels. but the art. Metalworking is still a magical art to most of our listeners and most of our viewers. How long does it take for you to come up with the concept for something like this? And then how long does it take for you to actually create this beautiful metalwork?
It took about 3 months to get an idea of the scale of the thing and to know how viable it was for a rentable piece of sculpture. And then about another month just to decide its pose or its stance, like where do the legs go, where do the toes go. So a lot of redrawing. And then about 6 months of fab, and that's all hand-forged stainless steel cold. So I didn't heat any metal up to form it, just hand-hammered it cold.
Well, that's what gives it that unique look. It's so smooth. It looks almost chrome-like.
Yeah, very shiny, very shiny.
All right, now here's the big question for me, because I've seen these sculptures everywhere. I love them. How do you move it from place to place? That can't be easy to get this much metal, this much material from one show to the next.
It's not bad. There are 12 toes, 4 legs, and 4 beak halves, and the primary body carapace. The box that this thing travels in is 4x4x11. So it's actually very compact. I just keep modularity in mind with the building of the thing. Also, this is all built from reclaimed material from previous sculptures, so the pieces that I used were small enough to encourage me to have them come apart and go back together. And that helps with away shows and assembly of a larger object, is to keep that modularity in mind.
I tell you, I'm glad that people like you show up, because the artistic touch really does put everything else into perspective. It really does make this a maker community. Thank you very much for sharing your time, sharing your talent. If they wanted to find out more about your work,
yes,
more about Gilly or Gilly's children,
yes,
where should they go?
They should go to my website, that is orionfredericks.net, orionfredericks.net.
There you have it, Orion Fredericks. He ain't no mother o' dragons. Now for something completely different. What about some 3D printing that doesn't actually involve filament? I'm here at Lumi to talk about a lenticular technology that uses the Intel RealSense camera. Exactly what is Lumi?
So what Lumi does is actually, lenticular is a really good word to use, because what we do is we print 3D prints that don't require the lenses that a lenticular, you know, postcard that you may have seen in a corner store usually requires. So what we do here to show off these little portraits, we use an Intel RealSense camera and we scan people with that to create a 3D model. And then our company is able to use 3D models and convert them into special patterns that you can print on a completely normal inkjet printer. You print 2 layers of that. You can kind of see that here. And when you align those and shine light through them, that's how you get a 3D effect. So it's a very, very simple way and cheap way of creating a 3D yourself. And so, for instance, you could use that as a preview. If you're a maker, you don't want to like print your object right away. You kind of want to see what it looks like in 3D. Or you just want to have like a fun poster of your friends that actually has depth to it. That's our technology.
And, of course, you're here at the Intel booth because you're using the Intel RealSense camera and their development environment.
Exactly.
Because the RealSense allows you to detect depth along with standard imagery.
Yeah, what's really awesome about the RealSense is it's, in addition to, you know, a normal webcam, you actually get the depth, as you just mentioned. And so that way, you know, you just have your friends sit still for about a minute. You move around them. There's a bunch of free software available online, even if you're not a developer. And it gives you a pretty good 3D model right out of the box. And what's cool about it is there's a couple of laptops and tablets out there already that have it built in. So some people already have this camera and probably don't even know about it. But we really think that there's going to be a big push. Like, people are going to have this tech in their hands and are able to scan the real world, make 3D models right away.
What is the application for this? I mean, of course, it's cool. I love it. I love the display. I love the demo. I love the fact that I can see 3D without having to use any of those 3D goggles.
Yep.
But where do you see this technology being used in the future? Is there a market for 2D, 3D photos?
I mean, we definitely think that there is a market for just being able to see 3D. You know, we want to be able to see 3D models without necessarily having to strap something on our head, you know. Not everyone's comfortable with that. As a first market, what we think for our company is interesting is there's all these backlit ad boxes that you see in cities already. You know, you go to the subway, there's a backlit sign. We can take that and make it 3D. And that's something that was very hard to do and expensive to do. If, you know, you use lenses or some special printing, we can use a standard printer that people already use and add depth to those signs. So we think that's one application. But really where we see this going in the future is we want to make, you know, computer displays, prints that are really in everyone's hands, because 3D is the way we see in the real world. And we think that's what our devices and our prints should be able to do as well.
Again, it's very interesting application of existing technologies. If they wanted to find out more about Lumi, more about what you're doing with this technology, where can they go?
Well, definitely go on our website, lumidisplay.com. We haven't released a product yet, but we have some info online and you can sign up and then we'll make sure you're the first to know as soon as something's available.
Thank you very much for speaking with us and thank you for sharing this interesting technology.
Oh, thank you.
And that's Lumi, photos in depth. Maybe you're a drone master. You build them, you fly them, but you're getting tired of flying them around in circles. If you're looking for something interesting to do with your latest creation, maybe you need to drop by Spin Master and talk to Miles, because he's got the Air Hogs Connect. Miles, what is this?
It's a fully flyable drone that gets integrated with an app that uses itself with augmented reality. So through flying around in this game world, you're using this drone to basically save the world. Kill aliens, take out fires, save people, more or less save the world every 5 minutes.
I saw you playing this just a while ago, and you're using a tablet to control the Air Hogs,
yes.
The little drone, and then it's using a camera to figure out where it is, and it changes what you see on the screen?
Not just the camera from the phone or from the tablet or, again, from the iPad. It uses certain sensors, and also it's got low-level Bluetooth integrated as well that helps it kind of control exactly where it is and keeps the connection going as it's flying around. You can knock over buildings. Again, if I'm flying and I hit a building, that building topples over. If I'm flying and I run into a pillar, the pillar will fall. Again, it knows exactly where I am because of the map.
We've been seeing more and more products, more and more technologies that are dedicated to merging the virtual and the real. And we call it augmented reality. But why did you choose to go with this route? What was it that made you say, I want to make this little drone part of an AR experience?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have that answer, because the man you're looking for is my favorite friend, developer. His name would be Steve. And if he were here right now, I guarantee you he'd probably say that the actual reality of it all is allowing an actual drone in a game. And having the not only fun of having a drone, but having it involved in this world that you get to continuously play. It doesn't end. Even when your drone is charging, because again, the drone can charge, you still have a fully functional, fully fun game that you can constantly be playing. It doesn't end when the drone's done. I got training exercises to do. I can completely upgrade it using my alien parts that I've been, you know, collecting as I've gone on. And again, by the time you're done upgrading and moving things around and making the drone, you know, fully customizable, you know, heavier or lighter or, you know, more engineer, less engineer, your drone's going to be charged, and you go right back in and you play all over again. You continuously go. That's why.
Anytime someone puts layers upon layers of fun, I'm all for it. Now, Miles, if they want to see more about the Air Hogs, if they want to see more about this game, if they want to find out more about Spin Master, where should they go?
Well, right now, actually, this is able for purchase on Amazon and our Barnes & Noble. Look at the .com, and you're going to be just fine.
Thank you very much for sharing your technology. Thank you for a little bit of fun there. And, folks, if you're looking for AR, maybe you're looking for a drone. Here's the challenge. You need to teach a youngster exactly how the brain works. Well, you could open up a biology book and try to read him a couple of chapters of the neurophysics of your brain, or you could just come to NeuroTinker. That's why I'm speaking with Joe and Zach, who are going to explain what they've done to help you explain what you're doing. What exactly is NeuroTinker, and why was it created? Who wants to start?
So NeuroTinker is a way for students to learn about the brain while physically building their own neural circuits.
We have chips called NeuroBytes. So these are individual neuron simulators. And the beauty of them is kids can learn about how to power something physical, like a knee-jerk reaction, like a Model I that we built over there. We have robots. We have NeuroBuggies that's powered based on the same principles that your brain works on. Individual neurons can be connected together in a more complex pattern to produce some really cool emergent behaviors. So yeah, you don't have to learn about it just in a textbook or a virtual screen. You can actually hold a neuron in your hand, and based on the pattern of connections, you can produce some amazing physical behaviors.
What I really like is that you've patterned this after an actual neuron interaction, where each neuron is not unique in and of itself, but it's interconnectedness with other neurons that make it capable of doing things. What did you need to do in the hardware to mimic that action?
It's pretty straightforward, actually. So we started with the Arduino platform. You know, the Arduino is an open source prototyping tool that's easy to program, very accessible. And then we just basically took the chipset in the Arduino and went cheaper and cheaper and cheaper until we found one that would make our bill of materials cost work. So they're based around the ATtiny processor. I can flip this over and show you. So there's ATtiny processor running about 500 lines of C. And all it's doing is looking at the inputs and doing a bunch of math and then deciding what color the LED should be and then setting an output when it's appropriate. So pretty straightforward.
Now, as you link up more and more of these, they're going to start to see more complex interactivity. You know, the lights will start to change. They'll start to flash at different at pulse widths. So how do you do that? I mean, of course, you want them to have a good experience of connecting the hardware and seeing something happen, but you also want to get them a realistic expectations of how neurons work. Where do you walk that fine line?
So that's a challenge, right? As an educator, that's what I'm responsible for thinking about. How do you develop curriculum, experiments, use cases that are simple enough for middle school and high school kids to understand on an individual neuron basis, but also complex enough where they can get into some really cool sort of simulations that they can build? So the curriculum and the experiment design is something that we're actively working on to make sure that it's appropriate for that age level. And the teacher, too. The teacher's got to be comfortable implementing that kind of curriculum in their learning space.
Where do you want to see this go? Because obviously this has a lot of applications. I mean, I'm not talking about just young children. I mean, this is something that everybody who's ever trying to figure out how the brain works would benefit from seeing, because it really does help you think of, oh, okay, I get it. You connect these, and these, and you get this. You connect it to those, and you get a completely different reaction. So what would you like to see NeuroTinker be doing at, say, the next World Maker Faire?
Can we go ahead?
No, go for it.
This is the 10th generation of our hardware. We're hoping within the next 3 months that we'll actually have a finalized product. We'll be able to scale our supply chain and actually have a product that we can start selling into schools, selling into the amateur scientist world, and then get feedback. You know, we have a forum on our website that we want to start seeing people post their own NeuroTinker projects on, you know, where they find a neural circuit in a textbook and they want to recreate it and see what they do with it. You know, our products are all open source. You know, all of our documentation is online, the firmware, the hardware, the PCB design, the whole nine yards. And what we're hoping is that people will decide they want to emulate different sensors and different motor outputs and so forth, and they'll build their own circuits and they'll share them and they'll create new use cases that we can't even imagine. Yeah. So that's what I hope. I hope, and next Maker Faire or the Maker Faire after that, I go to someone else's booth and they have some biologically inspired project that's powered by NeuroBytes using some amazing custom interface that they've developed and they've shared, and we start to build that community around neuroscience and neurotech and so forth.
Little Bits has done really well. We want to build off that model of having a diverse user base that has all these experiments they've developed on their own. So we can start with the curriculum and the experiments, but the people that know best are the people that are actually using it, so they can post up like, hey, this is something cool that I built, has to do with physiology, neuroscience, right? And then I want to share it with you, and you can riff off of that and do the same thing or add to it, right? So that's really, I think, where I'd like to see it go as well in the next couple of years.
I'll add that we, so the eye model that we have over here is, it's based around Little Bits light sensors. So we have 5 Little Bits light sensors that are acting as 5 photoreceptors in your eye. So we've made the platform Little Bits compatible. There's a lot of people that have Little Bits, so we're hoping that they'll say, wow, you know, I have this really interesting mechanical platform I've made with Little Bits, but I want to add some neuroscience or some biologically inspired processing element to it. And they mash them together, and, you know, who knows what they'll create.
Well, I know that we've got a lot of educators in our audience. In fact, there's been many calls for us to create a show that was dedicated to educational tech. So I'm sure there's some people out there who are intrigued. If they wanted to find out more about NeuroTinker, if they wanted to find out more about what you've done, where should they go?
NeuroTinker.com, Facebook.com/NeuroTinker, NeuroTinker on Instagram, NeuroTinker on Google, NeuroTinker on Twitter, NeuroTinker. No one else used the name, so you look.
Look for NeuroTinker. You'll find us on the web pretty quickly.
In particular, our website has an email sign up where we're going to have a newsletter. We collected email addresses for 2 years. We've sent out one email so far, so not very frequent, but we'll give you updates that way.
Joe, Zach, thank you very much for sharing your vision. Thank you for sharing your technology. And folks, if you want to learn about the brain, remember, it's all in your head. Chances are you own a speaker. Chances are you probably even know how a speaker works. Maybe if you're a maker, you've even built a speaker. But do you have the ability to explain to a young child how a speaker works? Do you have the ability to explain to a fellow maker the principles behind its usage? Well, here at Bose, they know speakers. That's why I'm speaking with Lee, who's going to explain what they've done to bring Bose to the young maker. Lee, what is the Bose Build?
Bose Build is a new product line from Bose. We launched it about 2 months ago, maybe 3 months ago, at Maker Faire in D.C., because we thought that was a perfect place to talk about what we're trying to do here, which is not just make a product that comes in different colors that kids might like, but give them a place to explore how things work starting from the first principles. We start with a magnet, get them to explore what magnets are, a coil of wire, and we build up conceptually until they have a great sounding Bluetooth speaker that they built.
That's what I love about this product, is that you're building upon layers of knowledge. Because even though we all have speakers, in fact, most of us have probably thrown out speakers at some point, we just take them for granted, the technology behind them is actually very foundational to the world that we live. You're dealing with magnets, with electromagnets, with ferrous and non-ferrous materials, and of course, what do different frequencies look like? What do they sound like? And what type of materials and enclosures enhance particular sounds? Now, if I were to teach a young child with this, what kind of lessons could I give him or her?
Sure. I mean, we start and we have an interactive app. I'll just kind of bring this up. It starts with a whole journey of discovery. This one's been unlocked, but if you were a child, you would start here and go through this whole journey of discovery that builds layer upon layer, as you were saying. And it starts by introducing them to what a magnet and a coil can do. And it's a simple matter of, I can show you here, launching a coil. So we have a coil. It's made out of copper. We describe that and explain that to them. It doesn't do anything when it's near a magnet on its own, but when we put electricity through it, we can get it to jump, and at different levels of power, I can get it to jump off the coil. And we usually get a wow moment right there, and that's where, in the context of our app, there's these videos that pop up and say, now you just said wow, I can teach you something, without calling it teaching, and then bring to life the concept that made that coil jump off the magnet. And then we just build, I'll give you one more, conceptually, this thing can not only repel a magnet, it can attract a magnet. And you can see here, you know, a couple times a second, we're making that thing jump up and down. Now we're starting to make vibrations, and now we can start hearing sounds and music come out of that coil and magnet.
This has always been my favorite part of any Maker Faire. That is when you can take something that is an abstract. They might learn in a classroom, yeah, okay, I've heard about electromagnets. Yeah, I've heard about what frequency curves look like. But then you show it in the real world, and you're right. You get that little bit of, oh, it's an aha moment. Eventually, they're going to take all of this and build it into something that actually creates sound, right?
Correct. We want to give them the time to explore. So the more time they take feeling those forces and with using all their different senses, listening, visual, touch, but then we don't want them to just say, well, I learned something, but what do I have in the end? We want to apply that so that they get real excited about learning, and so we give them all the parts they need, starting with a speaker cone, but the speaker looks a lot like one of the earlier activities. This is a paper speaker template, a single sheet of 8.5 by 11 paper with scissors and tape. You tape the magnet and coil, and you build up a working speaker. And now you really know how this works. So this is no longer a black box. And then you build this into a finished speaker cube that lights up in different colors, and you can customize it with different silhouette covers. And you're really proud of this now because you built it.
And that can't be overstated. That's an important part of the maker experience, especially for a young child, which is it's great to learn the science. It's great to see examples. But if you could take all of that and create something that they want to hold on to, that they will continue to use, then the lessons stick.
Yeah, and we didn't want to skimp on the finished speaker. Like, this is something that is going to be in a child's room for hopefully months, if not years. And they're going to listen to all the music just when they're getting into music, which is like a perfect time to kind of connect those dots. So you're not saying necessarily who likes science and engineering. You're saying who likes music, and then you're using that to unravel this onion.
I got to tell you, I love what you're doing here. Thank you so much for bringing this to the fair. If they wanted to find out more about the Bose Build or more about Bose in general, where would be the best place for them to go?
Best place to go is just build.bose.com. That's our dedicated website just for this product and this whole range of experiences, and all the information's there.
Lee, again, thank you for your time. Thank you for technology. And if you've got a youngin' who needs to learn about sound and technology, Bose wants you to build it. Like sand through Sisyphus, this is the end of Maker Faire. Over the past 48 hours, we've seen some of the most interesting, some of the most exciting developments in the maker community. From the emergence of even more capable 3D printers to devices that can build things that just a year ago were science fiction. And along the way, we've had a lot of fun looking at inventions from people who truly want to make the world a better place. From people who want to add a park to a busy street, or perhaps want to give clean water to the rest of the world. This is truly the spirit of Maker Faire. We will be bringing you more and more throughout the year, not just at Maker Faires, but on KnowHow on Twit TV, as well as our full slate of shows. All the latest and greatest in technologies that help people to make the things that we love. Until then, I'm Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit, saying goodbye from World Maker Faire, New York, 2016.